Welcome to the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, the longest-running podcast specifically focused on the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. We would like to thank our sponsor, Surgical Information Systems, providing cutting-edge information solutions for surgery providers. Trivalence offers a comprehensive next-generation ASC solution that optimizes payment and supply chain performance, enabling actionable data insights. MedServe, which is the only digital narcotic cabinet specifically designed and priced for surgery centers, helping standardize processes and compliance, eliminate paper logs, and prevent drug diversion. And Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, the nation's leading regulatory and accreditation compliance resource for ambulatory surgery centers. For more information about our sponsors, visit our website at ascpodcast.com.
Welcome to episode 219 of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey for April 18, 2024. We're recording live from ASCA 2024 Conference and Expo at the Gaylord Palms Resort and Convention Center in Orlando, Florida. This is Kim Pallone, administrator of the Niagara ASC and co-host of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey. We would like to remind our listeners that the ASC regulatory environment is a rapidly evolving landscape, and the material presented in this episode is based on the most current information available as of date of the recording. As such, it is important to recognize that the information may be subject to change, and we advise all ASCs to stay updated with the latest regulations and guidelines issued by the relevant regulatory bodies. And joining me today is John Gailey, the owner of Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies and one of the most respected experts in the ambulatory surgery industry, with over 30 years of experience. Mr. Gailey has authored over 10 books on the ASC industry and is a sought-after speaker on regulatory accreditation and finance issues.
So welcome, everyone, to day one, the end of day one. Hopefully everybody had an opportunity to listen to yesterday's episode where we talked about what we were expecting to hear today at the conference. So today, our question is, of course, you know, what was the session that perhaps meant the most to you, or what sparked something in you that you thought our audience might be interested? We have two people joining us today that weren't with us yesterday. Everybody that you heard yesterday, they're with us again today. So I'll start with you, Kelly.
Hi, I'm Kelly Fringenfield from the administrator from Valley Eye Surgery Center in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
We're proud to have them as one of our clients in the state of Pennsylvania. And Kim.
Yes, hi, I'm Kim Kuz. I am the director of nursing at Suffolk Surgery Center in Shirley, New York, Long Island. Thank you for having me, John.
My pleasure. And she is also one of our clients. And who wants to start?
I'll start. So to piggyback onto yesterday's sessions, we were talking about staffing, recruitment, and there were a lot of sessions today on how to recruit, how to retain, how to change your culture. And I think they gave you good strategies. And I think one of the best parts of these kind of conferences is that when you go to these conferences, you learn that you're not alone, there are so many other ASCs throughout the country that have the same struggles that you have, the same problems you have, and are asking really the same questions. So it's a little reassuring that you're not doing anything wrong. So it was good team building and good good pointers on what we can do as a team and as a group to help retain and change the culture throughout the ASCs, and not just with your staff, but with the physicians as well, which I think is an important component of the ASCs, because you think of so many times as the staff versus the physicians, and how you bring them together and build that team together, which is so important for success.
I noticed that in a couple of sessions that I'm in there that talk about collaborative. We always talk about that here, but how important it is today, especially in, as we mentioned yesterday, we're not getting people that have always worked together in a team. That sometimes they're actually new to even ambulatory surgery or new to nursing in general. Anybody else have a follow up on that? You know, something that you saw.
So in that same breath, just empowering our staff to, or the staff at these centers to speak up when they see things wrong or safety concerns and be able to celebrate that in the staff, helping them to realize that that really helps the whole team and continuing to help their voice being heard because they're the one in the ones in the weeds. So,
Jackie's on our education team. Okay, who's next?
One of the other sessions that I attended was cardiovascular surgery in the ASC, and that is a new upcoming field in the ASC industry, I think, as we transition from hospital settings. Some of the procedures that will start to be moved to the ASC world, as an OR nurse for many years ago, you wouldn't even imagine what could potentially be done. But there is a lot of setup involved to a cardiovascular surgery ASC, and it's got to be done very carefully, very thoughtfully. I believe you have to have a champion, surgeon champions, nurse champions, to make these ASCs very successful and safe. That was a great session.
And Donna and I were there with you. Donna.
One of the things that I thought was very interesting is that the speaker brought up the fact that we all in multi-specialty ASCs for years have said we only want to hire experienced staff. Well, when it comes to a cardiovascular ASC, you have to hire experienced staff, and they're not staff that are experienced in the operating room. They're staff that are experienced in a cath lab because those are essentially the procedures you're doing. So there is a smaller pool of nurses available, and it's most important that you find them and can bring them to your center so that you can provide really safe care.
They also mentioned some of the procedures that are perhaps coming in the future. And Don and I were sitting next to each other, and they mentioned Watchman. Now, I'm familiar with the Watchman procedure, and I'm thinking, please don't lead with that when we're going and trying to get states to approve these procedures or even to recruit nurses to participate in these procedures.
Well, because they also had AAA on there. Yeah.
Right.
It's like, what?
That was scary. I think to your point, one of my challenges with that session is I wanted so much more. Mm-hmm. I mean, the speaker was fantastic. Mm-hmm. She had so much to say. But, I mean, I'm listening thinking we should have a full-day conference just on cardiology and what it means because none of us in this room, well, I'm sorry, we do have one person in this room, Shane, has some much more familiarity with it. But it's something that we're all going to be learning, and we need, Shane, to know so much more about this. We're going to be relying on you to kind of keep an eye on it. Did you attend that session? You probably went.
I did.
Oh, you were next to me.
So, and I agree.
Scratch that.
I saved your seats.
Cut that out too.
No, I agree. I think is going to be also from a financial point of cost reduction in healthcare as well. Bringing it from a higher level, same level of care, you can provide an ASC versus hospital, but at a greater reduced cost.
Right.
To the public.
John, one of the things that I found very interesting was the fact that you have to have a crash cart in each of the rooms.
Yes.
Wow. That the procedures are being done besides in your other patient.
In addition
area.
To, right, mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
So if you're a two-room center, you're going to have a minimum of three crash carts.
Right. They also talked a little bit about the challenges that we're having right now in trying to get this procedure approved in other states and where we're going to be. We do know in New York, for example, that it's going to be a while before it comes to our state, but it has been done successfully. Zach, you went to the one on aging.
Yeah, so I had the opportunity to attend the session titled Attacking Your Aging, Strategies for Drilling Down into Your Aging Accounts While Leveraging Technology, hosted by Jocelyn Gaddy, the president and CEO of Intuitive Business Solutions. Her suggestions were specific practical steps centers could take as soon as they returned from ASCA. She was while explaining how to drill down into open AR, strategically manage your AR, your aging AR, by enhancing and upgrading your technology as well as leveraging existing technology and softwares, and managing accounts to focus on so that the focus could be on high-risk accounts. She described front-end revenue cycle management how this directly impacts open AR. She described the importance of educating patients on what money will be due and why, and setting expectations before their surgery to ensure the highest chance of payment. The technology enhancement portion of this was to use a patient estimator or setting up a payment plan in advance. She also discussed core revenue cycle management and how this affects open AR. This phase included everything, every RCM process between patients walking in the door for their first procedure until the claim has been submitted. One troublesome item she discussed was completeness and timeliness of op notes. An example of op notes would be, for example, missing implant invoices. And the technology enhancement suggestion in this case was to utilize software systems to add info on pricing. And as a final review, she emphasized technology helps eliminate errors and build efficiency into the revenue cycle starting from day one. And technology establishes an unprecedented level of efficiency and accuracy in RCM processes, and it can improve visibility to key statistics.
And Jocelyn is, of course, a friend of ours with Intuitive. We did a podcast recently where we talked, Zach, about technology and the importance of technology. It's interesting you're talking about RCM because we were actually focusing on the expense side. And, you know, we forget that this technology, these technological advancements are going, you know, to hit every aspect. And, you know, I think we take for granted that RCM has always been a technology-oriented area. And yet, to your point, they don't always look at all of those reports that are available, all those things that are available, or to make sure that somebody knows how to pull those reports from your system. That's a great idea. Continuing on the theme of finance, Tony, what did you do?
Okay, well, a couple things. First, I don't know if this is on finance, but I took some time to actually go around the
exhibit hall,
and I was surprised. Of course, you have the supply people, McKesson's, and then Stryker, and but there are so many vendors that are supports for so many different things that we have responsibilities for in the ASCs. Life safety, you know, of course, you know, the equipment maintenance, that type of thing. IT, you know, SIS and others. The satisfaction survey that now has to be done by, you know, a certified CMS, you know, vendor.
Contractor.
We were talking about cardiology. There's a team out there that does cardiology analytics to help cardiology ASCs to, you know, understand how to do those things. AR monitoring and analytics to, you know, how well your billers are doing, what they should be working on, supply chain supports, purchasing and supports. Just vendor after vendor of all the things that there's so many things to take care of, and you're seeing a lot of those boutique supports really, really coming up.
So that's an interesting theme right there. When we talk about, I mean, I think one thing that we know when we walk around, talk to everybody during this conference is we're never alone. I'm looking at Kim right now. She and I have been friends for 30 years. I was introduced to her when she was in labor, not in the but she was on the telephone. I was interviewing her. She got the job because she started screaming and she had, it was just easier to give her the job. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, Kim and I have been coming to these conferences for a number of years, and one of those things that we always talk about, and we lost this, you know, we lost 2 years of this, really, when we weren't attending these conferences, we weren't having these conversations. I have missed, you know, quite a number of the sessions here because I get caught in the hallway with these fantastic conversations. And we talk about puppies, but then we quickly launch into something else. You know what I mean? Is that these are deep conversations here. And Tony, to that point, I open it up to everybody else here because I think in addition to, you know, seeing the vendors out there that are doing this, you know, that are helping out, you know, obviously all of the people that you meet during this conference are colleagues of yours that might be able to help you in the future. We can all name people that we've met during these conferences, and they have become mentors of ours or associates of ours. And so anybody else have, like, any? Yeah, go ahead.
So I wish that I went to Zach's conference, but I went to a different one. But I get so much off of even what he just said because it's what I've been working on since I started at Niagara a year ago. But technology is huge. Like the EMR that we were using is just an older EMR and just wasn't easy to get data from. So we just actually purchased a new EMR that it just makes it much more clear and easy to find the issues with billing and to then work aging before we were just letting those cases go out the door. And then another thing that I actually got from the New York State Conference was like RFX. Like yeah. That is huge, just because before it was like so hard to keep like everything organized, like employee files and credentialing and contracts. And now that it's all in RFX, like if a question arises, it's like instant. Okay. It's not, let me go find that contract in the file cabinet in that office and where is it? So technology is definitely helping. Billing, the revenue cycle is huge, and we're seeing such a difference just from what we already cleaned up. So I wish I did go to your conference, but thank you for like summarizing that.
We do want to reach out and thank our sponsors, of course, who this is exactly what they do. SIS, Surgical Information Systems, have, you know, really the best revenue cycle system out there. And we're grateful for their support all of these years here. And they have a wonderful booth. If you're listening to this and you're at the conference and you haven't stopped by their booth, make sure you spend some time there. And to that end, they have wonderful new, you know, products or reporting capabilities within their system that you need to get to know. Trivalence, of course, which is a on the other side, the expense cycle. I haven't been able to get to their booth yet, but you know, when I do, we'll certainly have a conversation about, you know, the wonderful things that they're doing on the expense side. And definitely reach out to them, do a demo at their website at trivalence.com. And our newest sponsor, MedServe, which is an incredible pharmacy solution. Which is allows you to store your drugs and get rid of your old paper logs.
Your narcotic logs.
Okay. As well as just monitoring, you know, even drugs like propofol. You know, there's systems that are that can be in the operating room. There's systems that can be in the other room. So our point being is that there are solutions to a lot of the challenges that we're having. We know diversion is a major issue. We knew revenue cycle. We know expenses. You know, if you cover all of those things, you do not have to do this alone if you're out there. And you need to keep up with what's going on. And if you can't get to these conferences, you know, listen to our podcast, obviously. Go to the websites for our sponsors. You know, search it, reach out to your friends to find out what's going on. RFX, just going to announce it. RFX is going to be coming on shortly as one of our newest sponsors. That's why Kim mentioned it. And we're very excited about this particular product because of how it fits in and pulls everything else together that we've been talking about.
I like Tony's term of support boutiques.
Yeah.
Very good. You should can that because that makes them sound much more approachable and user-friendly. And they always make us look good.
Christina, surprisingly, you've been quiet so far. So this is not Christina normally. I don't know what's going on here, but Christina, yeah, go for it.
So one of the sessions that Kelly and I just sat in on was the forum, the Q&A forum for ASC leaders. And the panel was an anesthesiologist, an administrator, and then a AAHC life safety surveyor.
Right. And you had a fantastic moderator for that session.
Exactly. But I thought it was so interesting to hear everybody's questions. And it was so funny because the panel almost seemed surprised that everybody had the exact same issues going on in their center. Mm-hmm. And we all know when talking with each other that we all share the same struggles.
Yep. Yep. One of them being the criteria for anesthesia and case cancellations.
Yeah, well, and if you didn't figure out already, I was the moderator for the session, and I'm looking at all these questions coming through, and you know, and the questions just are scrolling by, and like Ozempic, GLP-1, you know, there were five questions. I had to consolidate them into one. Criteria for surgery was in there over and over again. I was very surprised, though, that the life safety questions, that there weren't more life safety questions, but I have a feeling that that might be because there have been two other sessions already on life safety.
He had just finished the session just before the Q&A.
Yeah.
He had his life safety session and then came to
so
the Q&A.
So they
I feel like a lot of questions were answered.
But I would say more than half the questions really had to do with anesthesia, which is not any big surprise here. There was one interesting question. I'm interested in your observation. I had to ask this question, but it was, does the physician have to see the patient before the procedure? And they said the reason the physician says he doesn't have to is because the nurse signs off on the location of the site. and the doctor has already talked to the patient beforehand, and they will, during the timeout, re-verify the site. And there was a noticeable, like, sigh, or, you know, like, yeah, everybody was very surprised at that question. And it was very nerve-wracking for me, because I'm thinking, I mean, I know the audience, you know, I'm sure that the person who asked the question knew what the right answer was. And by the way, if you don't know what the right answer is, they absolutely have to see that patient. The doctor has to see the patient beforehand. But wasn't that kind of surprising to you? Or
yeah, very surprising.
Yeah.
Well, is this because the doctors don't think they have to?
Yeah, right, right.
It's not because the staff don't realize the answer.
That's right.
It's almost like they need to find it somewhere in writing to say, here's why.
Exactly. We were joking that I'm hoping that people are like have their recorder going so that they can take it back to their owners on this.
I really think that they felt that, you know, seeing them in the office, you know, it would constitute as seeing them in the ASC, which is two completely different, you know.
And it could have been separated by two, 3 months.
Right.
It could have been months beforehand. So how are you going to say that this patient remains a candidate for surgery?
And, you know, the marking of the site should be by the someone in the operative
team.
Operative team. So unless that pre-op nurse is also circulating, he or she should, she can mark it, or he can mark it, but that's not the official marking.
So can a circulator mark the eye instead of a surgeon?
It's going to really depend on your definition of your surgical team. And then, as always, is that going to be the standard of care in the community that you serve? So you have to look up the definition of who can mark it. If it's surgical team, who is part of the surgical team? Or perhaps it goes so far as the surgical team actually performing the surgery, which would be at the field.
You'd also want to make sure that's in your policy.
Right, yeah.
Well, let me interject here, because I know that you know, Kim's site is in New York State. And again, not to be too state-specific, New York State specifically has NYSIP, which absolutely requires that. I can't speak to every state, but there are some states that specifically state that it has to be a physician doing it. Right, that's the standard of care in the community.
Like, if an anesthesiologist is doing the walking, the anesthesiologist has to...
That's right. That's exactly right. It's whoever's providing that. Yeah.
Correct. We would have a full team effort. We would have a nurse mark the site, so that way everybody was, you know, on par with delivering the drops. But then the surgeon would come over and circle that site, and that's how the whole team knew that the physicians signed off on this patient as well. So it's like a team effort.
Tina, welcome. You know, you were here yesterday, too. I should point out that equal opportunity here. You know, you and I do a lot of the same stuff, so we don't care. You know, we let everybody into the podcast. What was something that you, of course, are on the education committee with me. What was something that you took away from it that you know, was there anything today that you heard that was shocking to you?
I wouldn't say shocking, but very interesting. I was moderating the ASC syndication.
Yeah.
And that was with a lawyer, from McDermott, and just really taking into consideration, you know, when you're helping to develop these surgery centers, the operating agreement, how you want to structure it, what is their vision for it. So I really got a lot out of that session, looking on that level, working with different PE groups and things like that, management companies, to really get a better sense on, you know, there's a lot that you should take into consideration before you just say, hey, I'm going to open up a surgery center. So yeah. I really took a lot away from that.
I liked the HR session, because a lot of centers that are smaller and don't have that support system of other centers or a big brother don't realize how important a strong HR representative is in their organization. And the easiest way I can describe it is 100 years ago, one of my employees and I, we had an agreement for her childcare, et cetera, that she was going to do like 32 hours this week and 42 hours the next week or whatever. So she would reach, you know, the what was considered important for her to get benefits. And that's not legal. And, you know, even if it's agreed between the two of us. And, you know, you're doing it to help the employee. It's also obviously helping you. But if you don't have a person to ask that, you can get in trouble with the law.
And you're trying to do the right thing.
Yeah.
You're trying to be, mm-hmm. I mean, you weren't doing it as right. the employer, you're doing it to help the employee
as well. So you know, so the smaller centers out there that don't have an HR person or whose administrator is the HR person who's also the director of nursing and never had HR training, how did they know what the right answer is? And unless you keep calling your lawyer, it's probably cheaper to have an HR person than it is to have that tab from the law firm.
Because you don't even know what you don't know.
You don't know what you don't know.
Correct.
And
I think that's important for the ASCs that don't have a big brother.
And to that end, we at the podcast are working, or ASC Central, we are working on putting together a human resource conference that hopefully will be a little bit later this year. So just help is coming. We recognize that this is a major challenge that our listeners are having, and stay tuned for more information on that. Go ahead, Tony.
Well, on the HR, I found in running these centers that having a company that, not necessarily having to call an attorney all the time, but having a company that really knows what they're doing made a big difference for us, and we weren't that large. I wanted to follow on that, the ASC syndication. And the syndication of ASC is just the financing of it, you know, the equity contributions by all the owners. And, of course, that's the kind of stuff I like to do, you know, as work on the startups. And the operating agreement is a place to start. Also, the view, the vision that you have. Are you going to get into something, build it up for 5 years and cash out?
Right.
Or is you're looking for a place where you're going to do your surgeries, speaking to the physicians, for the next 20 years? So, you know, looking at the vision for it. And then all the regulatory issues related to the compliance and the kickback laws I find very interesting. One of my prior lives, I was a compliance officer for a health system. So then what fascinates me is, we begin to run these centers, and sometimes we get lost in the weeds and don't realize these guys own it.
Yeah.
And they went through a lot to have the will to put this in place. And sometimes they didn't do that good of a job. Sometimes they didn't do that good of a job for themselves.
Yeah.
And I thought that direction was really helpful and interesting a lot. And there were some physician owners, you can tell their owners, they're asking some really good questions. Because, often they feel like they know all things. And they really
doctors.
Need, yeah. But they really need a lot of direction. Just like after they own these places, they need a lot of help to run it effectively and safely. So, you know, but I still appreciate they're the ones that got this thing going. So I used to tell people as a CEO of these places that I'm the only person that these guys hired. I hired all of you because I can't do it all and I need your help. But they're the ones that are responsible for this. And they're the ones that will be held to task when CMS comes in. Anyway, so I liked that session. I liked what they represented in terms of, you know, those important startup issues with physicians.
Hey, so I have an interesting question to put out to everybody is that you brought up something very interesting. When we talk about the vision of the surgery center, I think sometimes we just assume that it's always profit driven, right? And actually, I'm looking at Kim. Kim and I started a surgery center together back in 2003. And the vision of this particular surgery center was not to make a bundle of money up front. They wanted to make money. They wanted to break even. But our dear friend, a doctor who's a retina surgeon, he came to us and said, our goal is to provide an efficient environment. And they all wanted 7 o'clock starts. Actually, they would have preferred 5 o'clock starts and try to work that out. And they all wanted 3 rooms.
Yeah.
So that didn't work out quite the way. But their vision was very much focused on efficiency. And I've always been kind of interested in this because I think this industry has perhaps spent a little bit too much time focusing more on money instead of focusing on patient care, efficiency, et cetera. Now, so this is outside of the sessions, other than Tony heard it, but in your wanderings and talking to other people, has that come up at all? You know, have you found people that have had a different vision that's not financially oriented?
For sure, the center that I ran for 22 years, the original thought was to have a surgery center close to the office that could help make the physicians actually more efficient in their office because they would be spending less time in the operating room. And initially it was just put, we were just developed to break even. Keep them breaking even. If they make a profit, that's great. But they're going to make a bigger profit in their office because we're going to get them back there sooner. And that was the initial thought of that surgery center.
And that actually theme, again, getting back to cardiology, that was one of the things that was mentioned during the cardiology session, is that now there's going to be money involved in cardiology. There's no doubt about it. But it was interesting that the speaker did not speak about money first.
Right.
She talked about the efficiency. Correct. And the patient safety and quality. That whole session, that list of things that were a real benefit were fascinating to me. And of course, let's face it, we've talked about this. We don't have a lot of experience in it. You know, we're operating room people. You know, we're used to, you know, really, you know, very different types of procedures. I don't think anybody here has run a cath lab. So, you know, but we're going to have to learn things like that and recognize that our doctors all come with a different goal, right? Vision.
Without quality, without efficiency, without decent people that are working for you, there will be no profit. You're going to lose in the end. Mm-hmm. You know, there's too much liability. You can't just go willy-nilly there.
Well, Mary brings up a very good point, is that sometimes we just assume that if we go for we go for profit, and then quality will follow. But really, I know everyone in the room is like saying the same thing, that we got to flip that. We concentrate in quality and the profits will come. If they need them. I mean, let's face it, there are centers out there, as we've said, the doctors are going to make a lot more money on the practice side. And I'm thinking about our venture capital, you know, organizations out there. You know, they came into this from a different thing. That it's like the surgery center was a sideline here. You know, they're making money on the other area, so you know they're much more focused on making sure that everything's efficient, that patients get in to see doctors on a more timely basis, and that there's a smooth flow from patient entering the practice, being diagnosed with whatever it is, and then efficiently getting into the system, and then that procedure being performed efficiently and safely, you know, for the patients. So so outside of the presentations, anybody have any interesting stories that you heard while you were out there?
Well, I will tell you that OSCAPS is just a buzz. You know, from the CMS reporting thing.
You went to the session on OSCAPS?
And everybody is. And Kelly introduced me to a girl. She's teaching people how to do the survey, yeah. Right?
And then she introduced me to her, and we are talking.
And I have her card for you.
And I have her card also.
My God, that girl got around today.
She's been very busy. Her name is Jessica Bush,
yeah.
And she is an RN. Her name of her company is Real Change RN. We are working with her already to try to get her on the podcast. And perhaps, as we talked about, there could be some real synergies there. You know, because she talks a lot about, by the way, change management. So it's not just the OSCAPS, which is the topic that she was, you know, focused on there. She also talks about how do we integrate other people, especially nurses, into a different environment that they're not used to being into. And
what was interesting that was said at the session was, if you show good faith and you've done everything you can.
You're talking about OSCAPS now.
Yeah, OSCAPS. To get 200 surveys in and you fail at it, Medicare probably won't ding you.
Right.
So.
As per Gina.
But.
Yeah, somebody else said in the background, I probably didn't hear it. Probably, right? Yeah. So.
Yeah. So then I was talking to another woman outside afterwards, and she said, so we're going to spend all this money at the ASC to get this service. She has decided that she's going to do a cost analysis on how much a ding would cost versus how much this system is going to cost and how would it work out better for them.
Well, and one of the people I talked to, we actually had this interesting conversation about, they're 100% self-pay. They do reproductive health, 100% self-pay. They're Medicare certified because they have to be Medicare certified. So the question is, do they have to do this? Because they don't have any Medicare patients. They don't, they will, a cut in the reimbursement, which is the penalty for not doing it, is not there. And it's an interesting question. And, you know, because, you know, we make the assumption that the system that we have right now is going to remain forever. what happens if they eventually come up with a different penalty for not participating in Medicare quality reporting?
Well, I mean, if you remember back those 100 years ago when you started your center with Kim. The premise behind us doing the patient satisfaction surveys was that we needed to have evidence when the hospitals said we were not safe. We needed that validation that we were giving good care and that the patients were the proof of that. So we're coming a whole different swing in that pendulum. It's not really about that.
Right.
It's now not about reimbursement.
Right.
What does one have to do with the other?
Yeah. Right.
You know, it makes absolutely no sense.
Well, and of course, we're not there yet with regard to really tying in the Medicare quality reporting program with the actual reimbursement system. Right now, it's pay for play. It's pay for reporting. There's no tie like there is in the hospital system at this point for that.
The importance of getting quality doctors. Like, don't assume because they have been, you know, to medical school, how much experience and what. You know, what can they bring to your center before you hire them, and make sure you have the paperwork in line before you just let them out on the floor.
You brought up something that was kind of interesting. I was listening to one of the speakers, and I don't know who it was, and they kind of said as an afterthought, oh, by the way, we do credentialing too. And it's like, if you're really doing credentialing, shouldn't you be leading with that? Right. I mean, to kind of say as an offshoot, we help you out with all these things and we do credentialing, too. It seems to me like that's the beginning of the whole process. And I just encourage everybody to take this much more seriously. And, those of you that have been with us for a while, we talk about credentialing in the podcast quite a bit. We have our January session where we spend a lot of time on it. You've got to take this seriously. Because Lori and I, as surveyors coming out, we are looking at and Shane are looking at those credential files. And by the way, they're not great now. Post pandemic, we're finding real holes in these, and a lack of knowledge of what's important in here, and a presumption that the doctor called me on Monday. He wants to do the procedures on Tuesday, and your job, Christina, as the administrator, is to make sure that happens. That's right. And then Christina opens up the file, does a query. You don't have all the information. Now, this doctor could be perfectly okay, but you've got to investigate anything that looks strange in there, right? Any breaks in service, license that's not, properly verified.
It's funny what she pointed out, which I never thought of before, is to, if they're moving to you from another state, to query their prior...
Yeah.
License.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
We used to query every state that the physician ever held license in. Absolutely.
That's, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I don't see that. I really don't see that when I'm doing review, credential reviews on a survey.
The other thing on that and with the credentialing is they were talking about the insurance. And how far back does your center go? 5 years, 10 years?
You're talking about malpractice claims?
Claim history. I'm thinking forever. And
that's a very good point. I think there is a misconception about malpractice. We want, you're absolutely right, that we're not going back just 5 years. We want the entire malpractice history there. We want to look closely at the ones that are within 5 years. And for your accreditation organization, they're going to focus on those. But you're absolutely right, from the standpoint of evaluating their eligibility for working in the center, you got to go way back. I'm looking around. Everybody is thirsty. We know we're holding you back from the alcohol downstairs. As always, I want to thank you all. We'll get this published as quickly as possible. We'll try to get together again one last time tomorrow after day two. And again, thank you so much for joining us today.
With the rapid changes occurring in the ASC industry, the exodus of experienced ASC administrators, nurse managers, and business office managers, there is an increasing demand for quality leadership education. That's where our industry-leading boot camps come in. In 2021, we introduced our administrator boot camp and the director of nursing boot camp, and in 2023, the business office manager boot camp. These boot camps have become the industry standard for ASC leadership training, and with over 225 graduates, lead the industry in mentored virtual training.
Live virtual training for the administrator boot camp occurs every January and July, and the director of nursing boot camp is October and May. Our new business office manager boot camp will continue in the spring of 2024. There are also on-demand versions of each boot camp for those who simply can't attend the live virtual programs.
All boot camps, including the on-demand boot camps, include access to resources, membership in the ASC Central Patron Program, copies of John's latest books, access to credentialing, conditions for coverage, and other recorded training programs, and of course our regular drop-in Zoom sessions where you can ask questions and interact with other patron and boot camp members.
Our programs also include AEU credits for those that are CASC certified. Our programs are comprehensive and taught by the nation's leading ASC experts and are designed for all levels of leadership, from experienced leaders who want to enhance their skills or pass the CASC exam, or those who are new to the industry and wish to learn how to run an ASC.
For more information about our live, virtual, and on-demand programs, visit ASC Central at asc-central.com. Or you can call us at 585-594-1167 or email us at info@ascpodcast.com for more information. This episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey is sponsored by Surgical Information Systems, providing cutting-edge information solutions for surgery providers. Trivalence, offering a comprehensive and next-generation ASC solution that optimizes payment and supply chain performance, enabling actionable data insights. MedServe, which offers the only digital narcotic cabinet specifically designed and priced for surgery centers, helping standardize processes and compliance, eliminate paper logs, and prevent drug diversion. And Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, which is the nation's leading regulatory and accreditation compliance resource for ambulatory surgery centers. For information about any of our sponsors, please visit our website at ascpodcast.com. This podcast is an educational and operational tool and is not intended to be a comprehensive resource for all rules, regulations, and standards that an ambulatory surgery center must meet. The advice provided should not be considered as, nor does it constitute legal advice or opinion. When reviewing specific situations involving legal and regulatory issues, attorneys and other professionals should be consulted. This has been a production of Eden Group Development. All rights are reserved. If you're interested in advertising or sponsoring the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. And we'd love to hear your questions and comments. Please email us at comments@ascpodcast.com.